Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone.
Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas.
Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Today's cool fact of the day is that DNA evidence now shows that the myth of the Amazonian woman was actually more likely an aggressive Scythian female warrior who smoked pot, drank a powerful fermented milk, had lots of tattoos, wore pants, and loved men. The Amazonians had fierce battle scars and were buried with their weapons. Okay, that's kind of badass. I kind of like that as a good, cool fact of the day. And it's particularly important given who today's guest is.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Now, I'm really excited about today's guest because today's guest is none other than Oprah. Oh, wait, hold on. Let me read that. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Erin Oprah. I'm Erin. I apologize. No.
Hello.
Erin's a former Marine who completed two tours in Iraq. She was the first female platoon leader in a war zone and a certified personal trainer since she was 18 years old. And she runs Oprah Fitness, where she works with really elite clients like Carrie Underwood, who's... Carrie Underwood's in Supergirl now, right?
Oh my gosh, does she not look amazing right now?
She totally does. And so you helped her out, huh?
Yeah, she looks awesome. She's worked hard. It's hard work, dedication. It's a lot of clean eating. So she's put in the work too.
Now, you documented the stuff you do with Carrie and your other celebrity clients in your new book called The 4x4 Diet. And I wanted to have you on the show to talk about some of the areas where we agree and even a couple where we don't necessarily agree. But you're all over this high-intensity stuff. And, I mean, you look great too. So let's talk about this. I think people listening would love to know how do you get the kind of results you get for people who really they get paid to look the way they look. Like this is where the metal the rubber hits the road. Because if metal hits the road, it's kind of screechy and it sparks. It's where the rubber hits the road.
So I am about the high intensity. I do like high intensity, and sometimes it's more a 3-mile run though. So on off days, you want to do that kind of stuff too, but high intensity. I've seen such a big change in all my clients' bodies. It's not just Carrie Underwood. It's everybody. It fits good into busy lifestyles. And it's fast, and the Tabatas make it a fun game. And I think that's probably what's taken the biggest hit for people, is it's not as boring as a lot of people think a lot of workouts are. When you say, oh, it's 20 seconds, I can do this. And you can do, in your mind, you can do anything for 20 seconds. So that's what I think changes the aspect of working out, is making more of a game out of it.
For someone listening who doesn't know about a Tabata, can you walk me through what that is?
So Tabata is my favorite style of training. What it is it's 4 minutes of high intensity workout. It's 20 second bursts of exercise followed by 10 seconds of rest for 8 rounds. So, and you can do that with all different exercises. You can do 4 exercises through the 8 rounds and do, so you would repeat everything twice. You can do 2 exercises. So like on the even rounds, you do 1 exercise and the odd rounds, you do another exercise, or you can make it really hard and do the same exercise for all 8 rounds.
Oh, that'll totally kick your butt.
That's my favorite. Like Tabata sprints on a treadmill, killer. And not to mention push-ups. Like I can do push-ups for day. I love push-ups. I can do tons of push-ups. But when you do them in that Tabata form, they're a killer. I mean, they destroy me. I love them.
So when you're doing Tabatas on a treadmill, do you just hop off for, so you do it for 20 seconds?
I just brace myself on the side things and jump my feet out. So I don't stop the treadmill. Otherwise it would take the whole time.
I always have a hard time with sprints on treadmills because it takes too long to come up to speed. And so I'm like more, I don't think spinning or like riding a bike does that much. So I tend to go outside, but I live in a rainforest.
Oh.
So I'm on Vancouver Island, but like it is technically a rainforest. It's just not a tropical rainforest. So you're like, I don't want to go running in the mud. That's annoying.
You know what? I don't like doing sprints as much outside. Maybe if I was on a field, like, but not through my neighborhood. I like when I do it in timed. I want to be more somewhere where it's controlled, because then I can just stop at the 20 seconds and I don't have to backtrack. You know what I'm talking about? Like I have a set path. If I want elevation, the elevation stays the same. So if I want to put on a treadmill, sometimes I do it with hill training, not always sprints. I'll jack the treadmill up high and run at a good speed, but not a sprint speed, and just do all hills. And man, does it kill you. But I've seen such a big difference, not just in myself, but in all my clients. Because when I say, hey, we're going to run for 10, that means like, oh, you know, like, but if I say, hey, we're going to get on here, we're going to do sprints and it's going to be quick. You have 20 seconds and that is it. And then you get to rest. They're like, oh, I got this 20 seconds. Well, really, when they get to the end of the 4 minutes, they're like, holy cow, you aren't kidding. That's hard.
One of the big things I've studied a lot is willpower. And a big part of the bulletproof approach is like controlling willpower towards food, but willpower towards exercise, it's the same thing. Like willpower is a finite resource. And if you're going to go grind out, you know, a really long run where you push yourself the whole way, it doesn't matter how well you've trained your willpower. It is trainable to a certain point, but as like everyone hits a wall. You might move the wall a little bit, but you're taking it out when you burn the willpower. But it doesn't take very much willpower. It's like one unit of willpower to run for 20 seconds. And you're like, okay, and then you break. But if it's not that grind against that, because if you burn all your willpower on your workout, you might have got some energy, but you might not want to like make a big decision later in the day. You might not want to just bring it all the way, because like you do burn something that's vital, right?
Right.
Do you sense that, or do you just get more energy from, you know, your 5 mile hard run? You might be one of those crazy people.
I mean, I do enjoy long runs too. I don't do a lot of them. I'm more of a soccer player. Soccer, boxing, sprinting is more mine, but I do 5 mile runs too. Yeah. So I mix them in. I'll do a couple a week, but
are these slow runs, or are these like pushing it hard runs?
No, they're pretty comfortable pace.
Oh, okay, cool. That's a different.
Yeah, not a sprint run. Not trying to compete on them or anything. Those are my comfortable. Just go to a different place in my mind and just relax and go for a stroll. That's kind of the runs, like my longer runs, that's what they are. And then the high intensity is where I'm like, balls to the wall, let's hit it.
So, how often do you recommend high intensity training?
You know what I say? It depends on what you're doing. If you're doing sprints, obviously you don't want to do those back to back. Your body needs to recover. I would give myself 2 day break in between each set of sprints. But if I was doing like Tabata, sometimes if you're doing them with weights, you could do Tabata the next day too. You just break up the body parts. So I wouldn't recommend using the same body parts back to back. So it depends on how you're doing, what you're doing your Tabata, your high intensity with. So like sprints, you break those up. But if you're doing 8 rounds of Tabata curls, man, what a change I've seen in biceps just doing that. It seems basic. It's not going to be a winding exercise, but I've seen such a difference in people's bodies, like the way their muscles have developed.
So a lot of the approaches that I do are like kind of Doug McGuff based, and it's high intensity, but it's not a Tabata with weights. And I'm going to experiment with what you're doing. I also do a lot of weird electrical and machine based like heavy loading stuff because I have a laboratory for that. But
I'm
intrigued.
Lots of toys.
It's like I'm having a blast. But I'm intrigued, like just for biceps. If I wanted to do Tabata style bicep curls, or if anyone listening wanted to, do I want to be dead like at the end of the eighth set? Want to like be unable to lift it? So then I want to like, so maybe it's like a 40-pound dumbbell. Like how heavy do I want to go for these?
So let's just take a female, for example.
Sure.
A lot of times an 8-pound dumbbell for most women, if you do 8 rounds of Tabata curls, is about all they're able to do.
And how fast do you do this? Are you flopping this around?
No. It's okay. Never flopping. It's definitely a very controlled manner. You want to make sure you get that good contraction, good squeeze on the biceps. And you want to make sure you're keeping proper form. We don't want injuries, okay. Of course, you know. But sometimes you have to strip in the middle. Like you might get to round 4 and be like, I can no longer keep the right form. So you drop the weight. Drop the weight if you need to. But form is obviously the most important thing. I'm huge on form. And I'm
so
sure
these are like 1
too.
Or 2 seconds minimum.
Yeah, just a good controlled, not holding at the top, not holding at the bottom, just nice and controlled movements.
Okay. And so you're doing this with weights, you're doing this with body weight exercise, and you're doing this with sprints. So we're in pretty good alignment on that stuff, like high intensity. I would probably think about more recovery, but you're also dealing with celebrities who have to look kind of lean and ripped in a way that I actually don't want to look that way. One of my proudest moments, the New York Times called me almost muscular. I'm like, win!
That's funny. Almost muscular, huh?
I'm like, great. I wasn't flabby. I wasn't fat. And I wasn't like super ripped, because that's not what I want, right?
So most of mine are not trying to get super ripped. I mean, most of the female clients are mostly just lean. Most of them are not looking to bulk. I don't look to get big.
It's hard for women to get big anyway. Like that's not the deal, unless you're really working it in a specific way, or unless you're using supplemental
something.
Stuff.
Yeah, and I don't recommend. I'm not an advocate of any supplements, really.
What about like bioidentical hormones? I mean, I'm an anti-aging guy, really, more than anything else. Yeah. So many of the celebs I talk to. Even I was just interviewing Mark Sisson the other day. He's on supplemental testosterone. He's 63. I took testosterone for 8 years when my levels were too low. Do you just not get into that with clients?
I let them deal with the doctors and let all their blood get tested. I do have clients on it.
Okay.
But,
does it seem to help or?
So are you talking more males or females?
Both. It seems like for women, like once you hit like 40, just a little bit of testosterone or a little bit of progesterone.
Sex drive. I've
totally.
Heard that big time. And women that have taken the testosterone, their sex drive, their husbands love it.
Totally. I'm on a mission to get women everywhere on testosterone.
I have never taken it though, but I'm definitely intrigued by it. I want to get all mine tested one day and just see. I mean, I don't know if mine's low or high, but I've never said you need to take it, but I've said if they lack energy and they lack everything, go get it checked. You know, I let the doctor definitely decide on that.
And like during heavy training, whether you're a man or a woman, just at very different levels, but having enough testosterone or any of the other hormones, adrenal hormones, like it can let you do the high intensity interval training more frequently without hitting an overtraining zone.
Right.
Do you, with the kind of, I mean, you're dealing with people who fly all over the world. They're like on set with bad food and in bad lighting for 18 hours a day. And, you know, like at least the few celebrities that I've had a chance to work with are, they're ballers. Like they have to have it mentally. They have to look good. And they have to just, it's actually punishing what happens there. Do you get overtraining symptoms in people because of their day job?
Think so. I think the way we change, because not every day do we do Tabata. Like some days we'll do a lot of small movements where it's just little weights and we're just doing little shoulder presses and things like that. Just small, tight movements, you know, no flopping, no, and not burpees. And then one day we're going to throw in the high intensity. So we kind of alter it all the time. And some days it's more cardio based. Some days we're going to just go run and we're going to do stuff outside. And then, so every day it changes. So I really haven't seen that. And nobody trains every day either. Yeah. So, you know, so there's always rest days. And the rest days, I still want people to move, though, because I think our bodies are made to move. And so even on your rest day does not mean you lay on the couch for the day. I recommend you still get your 10,000 steps. And our bodies are built to move. We feel better when we're moving. That doesn't mean you need to go get 50,000 steps in a day, but you should move. As I feel like I see a change in people's bodies. Like, even if you do 1 hour of exercise, that doesn't mean that you can sit the rest of the day. You know, do your 1 hour, but still continue to get your activity through the day. Our bodies are meant to move. And so I love to see that.
What do you recommend for clients when they're like, well, I wanted to move, but I was on set all day? Like, it seems like I have I know it's good to move. I have a standing desk. I have an adjustable height stand desk, which I really like. You know, I stand on a little spongy ergo mat that like has different terrain. But still, there are days when like there really isn't going to be 10,000 steps. What should I do on those days?
You know what? That's days that we all have. I have those days too, because sometimes I'm just training, and that means sometimes I'm standing in one person's living room the whole time. So I'm not getting much steps in myself. So a lot of times for me, that means a lot of jump. I go jump rope. Mix it in when I can. Like, even for them, they can jump rope sometimes on set, or sometimes it's just they might not get their 10,000. But try your hardest to get up and move every hour and do some kind of movement just to break from sitting. If you're on set and you're on camera, there's nothing you can do. Just try your hardest to do anything you can in little breaks. So if you have this 5 minutes, walk to the bathroom, something like that, instead of just sitting.
I built a pull-up bar. It's actually above the camera. It's this cool steampunk looking thing. So like I'll walk over and do a couple of pull-ups, and I manufacture a whole body vibration plate called the Bulletproof Vibe. And sometimes if I have like 5 minutes, if I'm on my headset, I'll actually go stand on it and my voice is like,
That's funny.
People usually don't know, like, something to get some movement in.
What's wrong with them? That's hilarious. So yeah, but like, even like Tabata's, like, if you're working, say you have an office job all day, and you're sitting there, and at lunchtime, if you pack your lunch, then you have your whole lunch break, because you don't have to drive to a restaurant, which not only are you going to save calories, now you have time to get a quick little workout in. So, and the bonus is, now after lunch, you're not going to want to take a nap, because if you pack a nice healthy lunch, you're not going to be in the carb overload where you're just going to want to go to sleep, which is what happens when you load up on a lot of bread and a lot of pasta and a lot of stuff like that. You feel heavy and you're ready for a nap. So if you eat a nice, healthy, nutritious lunch, and then you can knock out a couple Tabatas or go for a walk then. And then you feel rejuvenated for the day, the rest of the day.
Yeah, just getting the blood flowing is so big. And I've recommended for years with people, like, if you go to a gym or you go hook up with a trainer and the trainer only talks about exercise and doesn't talk about food, you should just get a different trainer. Because I didn't know this. I used to weigh 300 pounds.
Oh, really?
And I worked out an hour and a half a day, 6 days a week, half weights, half cardio, like 15 degree incline treadmill, wearing a backpack. I'm like, I'm just going to pound this out. And I didn't lose any weight. I could like max every machine in the gym, and I'm fat and inflamed. And I did this for more than a year and was just like really frustrated. And I was kind of angry for a while a long time ago, because when I switched the diet, I was able to lose the weight. And I'm like, it's a combination. And like, how your muscles look, that's going to be how you exercise. And how much body fat you have, that's going to be what you eat for the vast majority of it. And then that last little bit, the area where you play, is that combination of diet and exercise. Because, you know, getting below whatever your percentage is rough. And that's where celebrities want to be.
Right. But you know what? You can't out-train a bad diet. It doesn't matter how much you work out. I'm a big fan of that. You have to eat clean. If you want to see all the hard work that you've done, your eating has to be on par, or it's not going to work. You got to tag team both those together. The movement's going to make you feel better. Nutrition's going to make you feel better. But in order to see all the muscles that you've developed, you have to lean out your body, and that's going to be done through eating.
Yeah, you can't earn a potato chip. Like it doesn't work like that, right?
No, we're not dogs. We don't reward ourselves with food.
I could balance a potato chip on my nose.
Special talent.
Now, one thing I like about your book, The 4x4 Diet, is that you've got both sides of it. And I find that sometimes books are just all food or all exercise, and having both, it's like those are two sides of a coin. You talk about four toxic foods in your book that wreak havoc on your body? Like, what are the four most toxic foods that you deal with?
It's not necessarily four foods. It's four food things. Like, first one is cutting out starches at night. So I feel what I've seen through all my clients and just my own body is when I eat starches at night, when I wake up in the morning, I'm puffy, I'm swollen. So cutting out the starches in the evening, eating them early in the day when you have time to use them, I've seen a big difference in bodies change so fast when they do that. So cutting out the pizzas, the pastas, but even like the brown rice and stuff, those are the great carbs, but eat those starches earlier in the day.
Like pizza and pasta aren't the great carbs.
No, the brown rice. Pizza, pasta, we want to cut those out completely. I mean, have a cheat meal. We have to occasionally have something. Otherwise, people are just going to crash and burn and say, forget this. I hate this. You know. So occasionally having pizza is okay. I mean, that's what makes it a lifestyle, not a diet. We don't want people to quit. We want them to live like this forever. So, but yeah, cutting out the starches at night, even the whole wheat pasta, all that kind of stuff, the sweet potatoes, just eat them earlier in the day. And then the second one is sodium. People don't realize how much sodium, or the second one is sugar. Mm-hmm. Sugar is in everything. It's not, and I'm not saying we need to cut sugar out because that's one, there's a lot of great sugars. The natural sugars are great. We want to eat our fruits and stuff. But we need to watch all the added sugar, which is in everything. And look at that awesome chocolate bar you have, right? I need to try that out.
Oh, yeah. That'd
be a great one. I bet my clients would love that too. So I'm going to have to share that one around. But because everyone wants something sweet after dinner. Berries are always great. Then dark chocolate. I like dark chocolate dipped in a little bit of peanut butter or almond butter.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
That's like a classic thing. And it has essentially no sugar, right? Depending on how dark the chocolate really is, what else is in it. But if you do it right, it's zero sugar. And like, it's good.
Yeah, yours is zero sugar. That's why I want to try that one. I'm really, really interested in that. It's very intriguing to me. Then sodium. I mean, sodium is in so much of our food. And we think that we're eating healthy. You could go to a restaurant and you can order chicken and broccoli and still be at 2,000 milligrams because they just blast everything with so much salt.
Do you have like a recommended minimum and maximum for sodium?
I try to stay around in between like 18 to 2,000. Wow. I usually stay on the low side.
That's pretty low. So that's an area where I definitely have seen different research. And there's a, what's the guy's name? I probably have it off the top of my head. He was the head of the biggest journal on hypertension, who looked at all-cause mortality in sodium consumption. And what they had found was a U-shaped curve, and that when you went under a certain amount, your risk of heart attack went up because of an enzyme called renin. So when you drop sodium below, it turns out it's about 2,100, 2.1 grams. When it drops below there, your renin levels start to go up, your heart attack risk goes up. And if you go above somewhere around like 4 or 5, your risk starts to go up on the other end of the curve. And it was weird because the more stress you're under, the more your adrenals want salt. And I found for myself, I was doing everything healthy, so I had cut my salt to the point like my blood pressure was too low.
Oh, you weren't having any salt? I was not
having any salt. I was still getting some salt, but I wasn't having very much salt. And I'm like, I'm a big guy. I don't need low blood pressure. Like when you're as big as I am, it needs to be higher because there's a bigger distance between your heart and your brain. And like, you don't want to pass out when you stand up.
Right.
So I found that varying salt based on exercise and stress is important. If you're getting puffy, you got a problem. But if you're not getting puffy and you still crave salt, like there's probably a reason you're craving salt and it might be okay for you. In fact, this might even be good for you.
And sometimes though, we crave it because that's what we're used to eating too.
Totally.
You know, I was a saltaholic. I mean, I salted pizza. It's kind of, I love salt. And then one day I was like, you know what? I need to cut this back. This is bad. I noticed it everywhere, my body, from my cheeks to my fingers. I mean, my stomach. And as soon as I started cutting that out, obviously I didn't cut it out. That's unhealthy. But I just started cutting it way back. And what a difference I saw when I did that.
Yeah, you'll see a difference in how you look, and I find it's very individual. Like different people have different levels, and that was a learning experience for me to go too low. And if you're too high, like I said, you are going to get bloating. And then there's the counteracting things like taking potassium, taking magnesium, and the sodium magnesium ratio is actually pretty important too. And And you said you don't do supplements. You're not like a fan of magnesium or vitamin D or anything like that.
Actually, I do take vitamin D.
Oh, cool.
I take vitamin D. Yes. I take vitamin D every other day. Yes.
It actually, you can do it once a week. It doesn't really matter. It stays in the body pretty well. As long as you don't take it before bed. It's not good before bed.
No, I take it first thing in the morning. I take that and I do Juice Plus. Have you ever?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Wow. Blast from the past, right?
Right. I do. I enjoy it though. And I saw such a change in my hair and my nails
really?
And stuff.
Oh, that's
yes.
Cool.
And my energy level, as soon as I started taking them, I know it sounds weird, but at first I was like, really? I'll just see. Let's see what it does. But man, I do enjoy that product.
That's cool.
That's the only thing I take.
It's totally worth trying to see what works. And like you said, if you try it and it works, it doesn't matter if every study double-blinded out there says it can't possibly work.
If it works for you, why not?
Like I'm sorry, empirical evidence trumps double-blind studies. You're like, if I smack myself in the head and it hurts, I'm pretty sure that it hurts, even if the studies say it doesn't hurt or there are no studies.
Correct. And everybody reacts differently to everything. Every single person is different. And really, Juice Plus is technically not even a supplement. It's a food product, so it's not under the supplement list anyways.
I hear what you're saying. Like there's a lot of things that are foods. I have that same thing with the brain octane oil I make. Like it's, you know, you could consider it a supplement. It's a hypercritical, it's not technically hypercritical, but it's a very rare extract of coconut oil. And you can actually say it's a supplement or say it's a food, but I'm like, it comes from food, so it's food.
And does it have a food label on it?
Yeah, that one does have a food label on it.
It does.
Yeah, but it's one of the things that can be in the supplement aisle, it could be in the food aisle, and you can go either way. And it's very weird on the regulatory side what happens with all sorts of things. You know, even chocolate should probably have a supplement label on it when it's done right.
I hadn't even thought about that.
I mean, chocolate has powerful effects. And if you want to talk about the effects, it has to be labeled as a supplement. So if you put chocolate in little pellets and made them look like a supplement and label them like a supplement, you could probably say chocolate did good things for your health. But I'm not doing that. I'm just saying it tastes good.
It is healthy, though. There are health benefits to it.
Now, given this combination that you use of getting rid of these things, I got to ask one more question before we go into like the results that you're getting. When I work with clients, especially as they're going low carb, I use a cyclical ketogenic approach. I find that if they don't have a small amount of carbohydrate in the evening, especially in women, that their sleep quality goes down a lot. And you have a different approach where you have more starches earlier in the day. Do you see effects on sleep with the way you're setting up the day?
Man, I sleep like a champ.
Yeah.
Yes. I wear a Fitbit too that monitors my sleep. I mean, there's lots of other brands out there that do that, but that one I happen to wear is Fitbit. And I have like one or two restless, and I don't eat any starches in the night.
Cool. So it's totally working for you.
Yeah. And I've never had anyone else say that they can't sleep when they don't eat starches. Actually, I feel the people that do eat starches at night, they say it gives them crazy dreams. I get that a lot. Like when they don't eat them and then they eat starches in the evening, they say that their dreams are all weird. And then they wake up really puffy and then they wake up with a bad taste in their mouth when they eat a bunch of starches.
Yeast. Both of those symptoms are yeast, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're getting candida growing at night, you get that dragon breath and the weird dreams. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're not using ketosis as part of your program, right?
No.
Okay, cool. That may be a big difference there because I find if they're in ketosis, then they get the sleep issues if they don't have small amounts of starch, but that your clients are having starch just earlier in the day, so they have enough glycogen that they're making it through the night. It's no big
deal. I definitely don't believe with cutting out starches. I don't believe cutting out carbs. I feel like when you cut out any one thing and you tell someone they can't have it, that's all they can think about.
Yeah, it gets to be really obsessive, and that's one reason I'm going cyclical. I'm like, don't eat them for a few days and then eat them and don't eat them for a few days. And so you kind of go in and out.
Do you feel like when you do that, do you feel like you go overboard because you're just like, okay, two more days and I get to have as much as I want. Two more days. Do you feel like, so when you do have them, it's like a free for all and you can't stop?
Not anymore. When I first started doing this stuff, you know, more than a decade ago, absolutely. You're like, oh my God, it's cheat day. Like tacos and cherry turnovers and burritos and, you know, that doesn't work because then you'll have cravings for days and days. Mm-hmm. So with the approach from Bulletproof, it's that you're eating a very high, very clean fat diet with moderate amounts of high quality protein, tons of veggies, but no starch and no sugar. And you supplement ketones with brain octane, so you're getting into ketosis faster than you normally would biologically. And once you're in ketosis, you don't care about food. You lose all cravings, and you just, whatever. Like you almost just don't want to eat. And you do that for 3, 4, 5, 6 days. And then when it's time to come out of ketosis, instead of going crazy, you're like, okay, this is the day where I'm going to eat like sweet potatoes. And I do white rice instead of brown because people get bloating from brown.
Mm-hmm, they do. I've seen that. Actually, I don't really love rice in general.
Yeah.
I would rather a sweet potato anyways. Makes me feel better. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you on the sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are an amazing food. And they make if you bake them, they make really good fries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why would you eat rice when you have sweet potatoes? But it's good to switch up sometimes. But you do this. And then on that day, because you're still in mild ketosis because of the brain octane, you're like, I don't need food. Like the cravings that used to just plague me when I was obese, I just simply don't care about food. Like, I could skip my next three meals, and I'd be like, by that time, I'd be like, you know, it's really about time to eat. I can feel I'm a little hungry, but it's not like end of the world hunger. And before, it was like, oh my God, I can't wait 15 minutes, or I'm gonna like eat the person in front of me. And like, that change for me was just what liberated me.
You know what? I will say, I'm pretty active. Actually, I'm extremely active pretty much every day. I'm hyperactive and I'm hungry a lot. I control what I eat. I don't crave foods. I mean, I crave eating, but I don't crave junk food. There is, like, I don't crave pizza. I used to. I broke all the cravings. I have no sugar cravings whatsoever, which is really a nice place to be in, but it wasn't easy to get there. But once you kind of get there, it's like, whoa, I don't need sugar anymore. I don't need pizza. Like, in October, I decided I'm going to do this October fast thing on Instagram, give up one thing. And I was eating like a whole large pizza one day a week.
Wow.
Yeah, I love to eat. So I decided I'm giving up pizza completely. I need to get the cravings out of my mind. I've got to stop. So I did it for a month. And I've had like two pieces of pizza since October. Those cravings are completely gone. That was my only craving was pizza. And once I broke that, I have zero cravings now, which is really nice. I do get hungry. I mean, I like to eat. I eat probably about every 3 or 4 hours, sometimes less than that. But I just don't crave junk food.
Well, it's amazing what just cleaning up the diet does. And people are listening who are like super familiar with the approach that I've evolved. One of the things that I do on purpose, I interview all sorts of people. I've had like vegans on, like zero fat vegans, because what works for one group of people may not work for another. And like, I really encourage people, try different things. Like, try eating starches earlier in the day, and it may completely like upgrade everything you do. Try Tabata intervals, like in the 4x4 diet. And if that doesn't work, if you went for a jog every day that made you feel really good, I would probably laugh at you and go, ha ha, chronic cardio. But if you're looking good and feeling good, I actually would respect that so much. Like, it's totally cool, whatever works. But we like people like you who've practiced since you were 18, you can generally point people in a pretty good direction. And I really that one size fits all approach kind of upsets me, because I used to follow that when I weighed 300 pounds and it sure didn't fit me very well, and neither did my pants.
That's funny. I really feel like a lot of it is just cleaning up your eating, getting rid of as much processed food as you can, going to a lot of vegetables, a lot of some raw, some cooked. When you can ditch the junk food, the way you feel, the way you look is a total transformation. I mean, it just feels so good. That is what I think what gives me the energy to do what I do all day long. Is if I eat junk food, there's no way I'd be so tired.
It's really funny. Almost every really successful entrepreneur that I spend time with now has realized that. And all of them, and some of them anyway, they have their vices. Occasionally there's something. But for the most part, they've all noticed that if they're going to like run a business successfully, they need to not be eating a lot of junk food, because they just don't make good decisions and they're tired. Just like you're saying, same with me. You give me junk food, this stuff is like kryptonite for me. Like I'm gonna be a jerk. I'm gonna yell at my kids. Like I'm not gonna be very happy if I eat junk food, and it's not worth it.
Junk food. Even if I drink wine, I love wine. I mean, wine in moderation is fine, and most women, men, whatever, we all enjoy our alcohol or drinks occasionally. But when if I were to have two glasses, the next day I feel so awful. Now, I didn't used to be that way. When I drank more often, I didn't realize the effects of what alcohol did to me. But now, like even one glass, I wake up and I just don't feel the way I normally feel in the morning just from one glass of wine.
I've got to hook you up with a friend, my friend Todd from Dry Farm Wine. I'll get him to send you some. It's bulletproof.com/wine. And these guys did the same thing with wine that I did with coffee. They went through and like identified all the sources of toxins in wine. They lab test all their wine. They only work with a few growers. And Mark Sisson also is a big fan. And I don't drink wine anymore unless it's older than me for the same reason. There's actually a bunch of mold toxins from the fermentation process, and there's biogenic amines. And so I just don't process it very well. So I don't perform great the next day, but I drink wine that's lab tested, that's made properly, and I feel completely normal.
Do like you really?
It's not the alcohol, it's the other byproducts of yeast in the wine. So I'll get him to send you some, like we'll make sure after the show. Bulletproof.com/wine for people listening. I just did a podcast with him, so people have probably already heard me interview Todd, but if you try that, you might just be like, oh my goodness, I can have red wine occasionally. And it's not going to knock me out like it normally does. Because like, it's nice to have red wine, right?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I mean, I love the flavor of wine. I just don't love the effects of how I feel.
Oh, we're going to totally hack that. Like, I'm excited. Like, that's cool.
Now I'm going to want to drink wine every day. Come on now.
No, just one glass. All
right. That's right. Just one glass. I do want to try it, though. That sounds pretty cool.
Now, what are the results you're getting? Like give me like a big story about like massive results from the 4x4 diet. Well, I say diet and exercise because you're doing it together.
Right? Okay, so here, this is someone that was just very thin. Like she was a very thin woman, and you know, people are like, oh, you're so skinny, you're fine, why would you work out? You know, you're skinny already, why do you need to eat healthy? Well, she was she's very thin, and she couldn't even barely make it up a flight of stairs. Just super weak. Like she drank zero water, which I think is really important, and tons of coffee, zero water.
Hold on, there's something to be said for that. I'm just kidding.
Right? It's pitcher coffee.
I'm totally kidding. Don't do that. Bad idea.
No, bad idea. But so she wasn't drinking any water. And so we started doing the Tabatas. We started very slowly. I mean, the first workout, we did like 8 lunges and she puked. Like she was in such bad shape. And now she's like a whole new person. She's playing with her kids and she has more muscle and she just feels, I mean, she feels totally different. She's upped her water. She's dropped her coffee. Now we did not cut coffee back because I love coffee. I mean, coffee, we dropped drinking like 10 cups a day, but.
Yeah, 10 cups a day is not a good idea.
And no.
I tell people, they ask me that too. I'm like, no, seriously, even though I would like make another nickel or something, no, like you just don't do it.
Did you see the study about coffee where it said 6 cups of coffee a day is curing all these cancers? Have you seen that? I have not read enough about it to know anything about it, but I don't. What are your thoughts?
I think
on
it
that?
Was more helping you avoid it rather than cure it.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Avoid, yes, yeah, you're correct.
I'm not allowed to post this study because I run a coffee company. But I'd like to. I found that it was a really interesting study to read.
It was pancreatic cancer, right? Was a big one?
One of them. And there were a bunch of others. And there's no like proof that coffee did that. They found a clear association between coffee drinking. So there's a correlation but not causation. But still, I put coffee in the superfood category because of its high polyphenol count. Because there's like, if you just Google coffee and health, like the number of studies out there is astounding.
There is.
It's like the opposite of tobacco.
Like right? They were in that one study, they were saying like 2 cups of coffee will prevent this cancer, 4 cups of coffee will prevent this cancer, all the way up to 6 cups of coffee prevented this cancer. It was a pretty neat study though.
You know what I do I definitely read that. When I started drinking Bulletproof, I went way down on the amount of coffee that I needed. Because normal coffee, you drink it and then you crash, and you drink it and you crash, you drink it and you crash. And with Bulletproof, you drink it and then like 4 hours later you land, but you never crash. Huh. So I drink like 1 or 2 cups a day and that's it. And I'm like, I actually want to drink more coffee because of these studies. So I manufacture a decaf that I almost never talk about, but it's like the only low mold decaf out there. And decaf coffee is allowed legally to have a lot more mold in Europe. And there's no limits in the US at all. So it's usually like, you want to get a headache, drink decaf. So I like did all this weird engineering and made a decaf. And I've started drinking like 4 cups of decaf in the afternoon just because I like it. And I don't know if it's made a difference for me or not, but I'm drinking more coffee now just because I've seen all the studies that maybe I should have another couple cups.
I love coffee at night. I love to sit on my couch with a cup, especially in the winter.
With caffeine?
We put the with the French press. Put the decaf in the French press, and I love that in the evenings.
That's the best way to make it because the metal filter gives you the coffee oils that have some of the effects of coffee. So you're totally rocking the coffee.
I love it.
Now, so you have this client who's super skinny, and she got her muscle mass back. Did she put on fat? It sounds like she needed to.
I wouldn't say she needed to put on fat. She just needed to tighten up a little bit. Yeah, okay. She was, you know what some people refer to as skinny fat. You know, she was thin, but zero muscle. So yeah. I wouldn't say she put on fat. She just developed muscle underneath her.
Yeah, skinny fat is such a bad thing. You don't see it, but it's not there. And when I met my wife, Dr. Lana, she wasn't skinny fat, but she was so skinny. Like she had, you know, a six pack, but she had no butt. And like to the point where when she sat down, it hurt because there was like not enough padding on her butt. And she was cold all the time. And just she couldn't put on weight no matter how much she ate or what she ate. So we tweaked her diet. And once we got rid of the things that were messing with her, she was able to put on like 20 pounds. Some of it was muscle and some of it was like the right fat. We're like, oh, look, I can sit down and it's comfy now.
That's awesome.
And like my pants fit better and then stopped. And it's interesting that we have such a problem with obesity that people are so focused on that. But the people I know who are extremely lean are like, no, really, I would love to put on some muscle or I would love to put on just a little bit more body fat because I would feel better.
She never really said she wanted to put on body fat or anything. What she wanted was to feel good. That's all she wanted. She's like, I want to have energy. I want to be able to, my kids' bedrooms, I want to be able to walk the stairs. I want to be able to play with my children. And she couldn't do anything at all. So it's made a world of difference. So people forget about the skinny people that still need to become healthy. So it's both sides. And then I've seen people, you know, that are just want to lose the last 10 pounds. Now you could do one little tweak. Sometimes that's just cutting out starches at night, and all of a sudden they'll see that last little bit of weight will just go away.
All right, so there's a challenge for everyone on the Bulletproof diet. Try switching your starch around. Have it at lunch and see if you get food cravings in the afternoon, which is my prediction. but see if you feel better in the morning and you look tighter and
leaner. But you still do things in your mind that make you feel like you're eating it. If you just say, well, I'm just going to eat vegetables, well, that doesn't work. You can do things like zucchini noodles. That really helps.
Oh, yeah.
I love zucchini noodles with some fresh fish on top or whatever you want to put on it. That kind of stuff still makes you feel like you're getting it without the food cravings being there. So you still feel like you're getting it.
I do the zucchini, but then I like soak it in butter and then like, oh, yeah.
Well, I don't quite soak it in butter. But I do like a little olive oil and lots and lots and lots of seasonings. I'm a seasoning fanatic. So I feel
What's your favorite seasoning?
You know, I've been on a dill kick lately.
Dill? I didn't predict that one.
I know. I love, love, love dill. And cayenne pepper. If you could see the amount of cayenne pepper I go through. I get the big tubs and it lasts like 2-3 weeks.
Oh, so you're super into the cayenne.
And not necessarily for health reasons. I love everything super hot.
And you're in a part of the world where lots of food is pretty spicy, right? You're somewhere down south.
South, right? Good Tennessee. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't really ever go eat barbecue, but yeah, there's lots of that here.
You could probably get it on pizza if you wanted to, you know.
No pizza for me. I'm done. I finally got rid of that one. That took a while. That was a hard one for me.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about belly fat, because that is the bane of every actor or actress who's had to go shirtless. What do you do to get rid of pesky belly fat?
That's the starches right there. Alcohol and starches.
Alcohol always puffs you out, man. It's just not a good idea to drink every night if you want to look good.
No, but you know, we all think alcohol is our friend, but it really isn't. I mean, alcohol will pack on the weight really fast. It will leave you puffy and not feeling your best. So it's a combination of a lose-lose right there. You're going to be puffy, you're going to gain weight, and you're not going to feel good.
You have a bunch of recipes in the book, and I just came out with the recipe book as well, and it's an enormous amount of work to come up with all those things. How did you go about doing it?
Just playing with, I mean, I spent weeks and weeks, my mom and I, we did it together. My mom, my husband, all of us did. And it's also things that I've just cooked over the years, just things that my family enjoys. And then I just tweak some things that a lot of people love in our society. I just tweak them to make them a little bit healthier. And I didn't want things that are hard to cook. I don't love cooking. Absolutely. Actually, I hate cooking. I know it's part of life. So I do cook, but I don't enjoy cooking. So everything I cook is quick. If it doesn't take a couple minutes, I'm pretty much not going to do it. And I do a lot of my cooking. I prep it and then I can just warm up because I'm never really home. So it's, and then I'm on the road all day working. And so I take all my food with me for the whole day. So I prep a lot of food and take it to make life simple. But coming up with most of my recipes were things that I had cooked over the years and things that people as like kids like that you could change to make them a little bit healthier, like the almond flour chicken tenders, things like that, which are delicious. Chicken tenders, everyone loves chicken tenders. So it's just changing up to make them a little bit healthier. What kind of recipes did you do on yours?
We did 125 recipes.
Ooh, that's a lot of work.
I actually ended up co-working with a professional chef, actually several professional chefs, in order to incorporate like the principles of the diet. Because I know the stuff I make and like all my classic recipes I make for my family, like creamed vegetables, and there's a bunch of soups and a bunch of salads that are kind of core to what I do because they're convenient and easy. But some of the things that we were able to come up with, like there's an arugula pear salad with chocolate on it. It sounds ridiculous. And like,
crazy.
Like when the chefs proposed that, I'm like, well, it meets all of our like macro goals here. It's got a little bit of fructose from the fruit, but not too much. But I'm like, it doesn't sound like it's going to do it, but it's so amazing that we served it at the last Bulletproof conference. When you went to a few of the restaurants, it was like a signature salad. We just got a bunch of local chefs to agree to make things from the book so that people could just go out to dinner and eat Bulletproof. And that thing just still sticks in my mind, and I make it occasionally at home. And what you do is you put on a normal dressing that's in the book, and then you also just do a little drizzling using the Bulletproof low mold chocolate thing. And the chocolate flavor just explodes as a counterpoint to the vinegar. And you're like, really? This is a zero sugar thing except for the pears? And like, I don't know. That one stands out to me.
You know what I could see? And that is that sweet and tart taste that people love. The combination of those two together. Because you get that tartness from the vinegar and then you get the sweetness from the chocolate. It's kind of like sweet and salty, like kettle corn.
What's your very favorite recipe? I mean, it's like a labor of love to make recipes in a book. If you're listening to this and you've never like written a recipe book, it's like painting or something. It's there's art, but there's just a lot of like energy goes into it.
Yeah,
so you must have one where you're like, okay, that's the one.
You know what? I would say the zucchini noodles. I am obsessed with zucchini noodles. I love them. I love them with grilled salmon on top or tilapia. I like them with any fish on top. It's probably my favorite thing on there.
So you do dill and cayenne together on them?
Or? I do dill, cayenne, garlic powder. I'll just pour everything. I'll take everything that, except for all the salt ones. I don't pour any of the salt ones on there. But, I mean, there's so many others. Sometimes I'll do a bunch of cilantro in there. I mean, I change it up every time. But right now, I'm on a dill kick.
Nice. Oh, cilantro is pretty amazing.
I love cilantro too. Yeah, we go through a lot of that. I put that in all my salads pretty much.
And I want to switch gears a bit. I want to talk about your time in the military because you've definitely blazed some trails there. And I'm really interested in the fight or flight response of humans. And so much of what we do throughout the day that gets triggered in people, whether they're trained for combat or not. I have some former soldiers working for Bulletproof at high levels. And I've interviewed, you know, Navy SEALs and it's really interesting when you read books like On Combat and all that, you find that there's a perspective on combat and then there's a perspective on like coming out of combat and like working in real life. And I want to know, what did your combat experience bring to either your training or your nutrition or just to your practice when you came out of war? Like what did you bring with you that was useful and what didn't work for you?
Well, definitely not nutrition. Did not come out of the military. Those MREs were not nutritious. I mean, no nutrition.
Did you ever make an MRE smoothie in the field? Oh, okay.
You know what we made was we opened the cocoa powder that was in the MREs. Have you ever opened an MRE before?
I have.
And there's always a hot chocolate. We just poured water in it, and that was our pudding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so bad. I mean, that's, and then you get Skittles, and it was not healthy. So nutrition did not come out of the military. I feel like discipline. That would probably be the main thing. You know, my job, I love my job that I have now, but I loved the Marine Corps. I mean, I enjoyed my experience. Of course, it has ups and downs, just like any job, but it was such a great time of my life. I wouldn't say war was necessarily fun. It was something I learned a lot from, have been able to carry that the rest of my life. It's discipline, hard work will get you to where you need to be. That would probably be the biggest thing that I took from the military and how to lead. When I was over there, I led the first. So the Marine Corps has never had an all-female platoon. They formed one when we were in Iraq to search women Iraqis because men couldn't search them. So we formed a female Marine platoon, and then I became the platoon sergeant in that platoon, and we got attached to the infantry. So that was a big experience for me. I learned so much. Like, I had to go to a lot of debriefings of like colonels and stuff, the real high ranked big dogs, because there wasn't anyone with this platoon. So I just learned so much just by being around such a high ranking people in the Marine Corps.
It's really interesting because I came across something just in the weird reading that I do that back in the Civil War, there were at least 250 women who dressed as men and fought in combat, because like it wouldn't be okay to fight as a woman back then. So even Lincoln apparently knew about this and was like, all right, that's fine. Like, you want to fight? That's cool. So those were like really early trailblazers. And did you have a hard time doing that? Because this is back in Iraq. This isn't Afghanistan. So this was back when I think it was still pretty controversial, right?
Women, are you talking about women in the Marine Corps or women over there? Yes. And it's something I have fought. I had requested mass. I can't even tell you how many times I fought to stay with my platoon, because when we left for war from the States to go over there, they said, you can't go. You can't be with the platoon. We're going where only males can go. I was like, I've trained all these years and you're telling me I can't go? Well, that's BS. That's not going to work. So they left and I got left here. There's another girl with me. And we got left here in the States, and I requested mass, and then they ended up sending us. Well, we were just going with someone else. They wouldn't let us go where our unit was going. And so when we did get over there, they did finally let us. I finally won and got to, the helicopter flew in and picked us up and took us back to our unit, which was really cool. But I encountered that several times in the Marine Corps. And it's getting better. Like, I wanted to be like part of the Marine Corps recon. I wanted to do all that stuff, like G.I. Jane. That was my dream. Like, that's the kind of stuff I loved. Like, I was like, one day maybe. Obviously, that was not an option for female in the Marine Corps or in any branch at that point. Yeah. But now it is changing. And I'm like, ooh, maybe I can go back in. I want to try that out. But obviously, I'm too old now. But I just think it's so – I think it's amazing that it's finally changing for women. I want – all women to have the opportunity that men have. I kind of see where they say women can't because men have a harder time in war scenarios, would want to defend a woman more than they maybe would a male. It would be harder for them. They'd be affected more by it. But I feel like we're entitled to the same rights as guys.
I hear you there. There was an interesting study in 2012 looking at fight or flight response, which is, of course, why I read it. It said that men are like genetically programmed with fight or flight, like, you know, run away or kill, but that women tend to have a hormonal tend and befriend reaction. And so that's one argument that says that women shouldn't be in combat. But there's another argument that says that the absence of the male gene would make you a better warrior because you're not dealing with fight or flight, right? Because a tend and befriend reaction actually lets you act more rationally and with more control than, you know, pure blind kill them all kind of stuff.
I don't know. I could see good in both of those traits. Exactly. I mean, I don't know which one's better. I mean, as long as they're not too nurturing, obviously, I think that would be a hard trait to have while you're over there. If you're more of a nurturer, that probably wouldn't be, as a woman that has that kind of soft, tender heart, probably not the right place for you. But those kind of people aren't going to fight in war. Those are not the ones that are signing up. The ones that are signing up have that drive and have that desire. And if they don't, they're not signing up for the jobs that are going to put them in that spot. They're signing up for different jobs. And so I feel like the ones that are signing up for the job have the drive to get out there and do the same thing as the men.
And with an all-volunteer military, it's very different than in a draft situation.
Too. Absolutely.
Like, you know, you signed up for this, you wanted that, and so you know, you're doing it. That's another big part of it. But I find it fascinating because, you know, I'm obviously a male. I'm going to have a male response to fight or flight stuff. But to imagine that you have a different, at least on average, women have a different fight or flight response than men do, especially in combat situations. I don't even think that's been studied very well in books like On Combat and On Killing, which are just fantastic books about the neurology of what happens in emergency situations. It's like, man. They barely talk about women in those books because most of the history of combat's men. Mm-hmm. So I think there is great science and research to be done here, and it'll probably generalize to what, you know, female firefighters or female paramedics or emergency room doctors and first responders, like what they do as well. But I hope we do more research on that because I think it'd be cool.
I think it'd be very interesting. I mean, I would love to be in the military still. It was a great place. The timing was time for me to get out, but I think the Marine Corps is amazing. Amazing job, amazing career to have. I wouldn't change anything I did.
You're still serving in a different way now. So, you know, when you take the time to put together, you know, a book that can change people's lives, that's another kind of service. So I appreciate that as well. Now, we're up to the end of the show, and I've got one more question for you. And if someone came to you tomorrow and said, look, based on everything you know, you're a trainer, you've been in the military, you've done all sorts of other stuff, and based on your entire life's experience, what are the three pieces of advice you'd have for me so that I could kick more ass at everything I do? So I want to perform better at life. What do I need to know?
One, you have to get your eating under control. Number one, I feel like we have to find a way to balance out your eating. If you can eat clean, I feel like you can control so many aspects of your life. We need to move more. We need to, because when you move, you have more energy. So then you can do more. Not only are your workouts going to be more productive. I'm not talking about just strictly working out. I'm talking about just moving in general. Your workouts are more productive. When you sit all day, you get home and you're exhausted because you sat all day. Your body's stiff. You're uncomfortable. Then it's hard to work out. The more you move, the better you just feel. And then discipline. I mean, we all have to find discipline. Discipline can get us. Discipline is what keeps us from eating junk food when maybe we know we want it, but it's not our time to have it. Discipline is just, I think, a key to a lot of success. Hard work and discipline are the two things that are going to get you where you want to be.
Well, thanks for your advice. You've been listening to Aaron Opria, author of the 4x4 Diet. Aaron, where can people find out more about your diet, about your work, about your celebrity clients? Where should they go to learn more?
You know what? I have a couple places we can go. You can go to my Instagram, at Aaron Opria, O-P-R-E-A, or you can check me out on my website, aaronopria.com, O-P-R-E-A. A lot of people get confused on that. Lots of different spellings, and there's a link for my book on my website, The 4x4 Diet, so check that out. And okay. here's a picture of the cover of it, if you guys haven't seen it yet.
Oh, nice. Yeah, hold that up. Hold it close to the camera so we can get it.
You guys get that? All right. Awesome.
We'll include that
in the
show notes. People can check that out. They want to look at that and check out some of the recipes and how you've written about Tabata intervals, which is a really good way to get a good workout. And I really appreciate you being on Bulletproof Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been great. It's wonderful talking to you.
If you enjoyed today's show, you know what to do. Actually, there's a couple things you could do. One is check out the 4x4 Diet. This is one of those books. You want to really learn about the exercise. You want to look at what foods you can avoid, different ideas about timing of nutrients. I'm open to different ideas all the time, and you should be too. And there's a couple other things you could do. One is, did I mention the new love of my life? Bulletproof Instamix. If I didn't, I should have, because we just came out with this and I've been working on this for about 3 years to find a powder, a packet that gives you the grass-fed butter, the brain octane. You open up the packet, you pour it into your fresh brewed Bulletproof coffee, shake it, stir it up, and you've got real Bulletproof coffee on the road, in the office. No mess, no stickiness, no nothing. And brain octane oil raises ketones way better than MCT oil. And it turns out coconut oil raises ketones less than fasting. Coconut oil doesn't work. You get a little suppression of hunger. You want to suppress hunger all the way? Use enough brain octane to raise your ketones to 0.5 on a blood meter. And that is shown in a couple studies to affect levels of CCK, which is your fullness hormone, and levels of ghrelin, which is your food craving hormone. So you want to turn off hunger, try some Bulletproof coffee. You can make it more easily with Instamix. You can subscribe and save a bunch of money. We'll just send it to you every month. You're good to go. And this has absolutely changed my travel. And while you're ordering that, we already talked about the Bulletproof chocolate fuel bars, also infused with Bulletproof XCT oil and zero sugar. You put these things together, you've got super amounts of the right fats. Tastes amazing. Who doesn't like coffee and chocolate? Like, my God, the kind of living. Have a beautiful day.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.